When Columbus left Spain to look for the New World, so what exactly was he looking for the New World for? What was he hoping to discover there?
To find the Chilazon.
To find the Chilazon.
Yes.
what was he hoping?
What is it he left for? It's the ocean.
What,
he was Jewish. Don't you know he was Jewish?
He was looking for a new route to the Indies. Because what was valuable? What did the Europeans find valuable in the Indies? Spices. Spices for what? For cooking, cinnamon, and So my father told me something very interesting. He said in Europe the winters were very, very cold, and it was difficult for people to change out of their clothing and into the next day's clothing because the winters were very, very cold. And so what they used to do was at the beginning of the winter they would put on whatever, their long johns, and then when it got a little bit colder, they would put on another layer. They wouldn't take off the first layer. And it got even colder than that, they would put on a third layer, and colder, they would put on a fourth layer. What's the problem with that is that the bottom layers can start to smell a little bit. So they had sweet-smelling spices, which they put on in between each layer. And that was the tremendous value of the spices from the East Indies, is that they would use that to keep themselves warm but still smelling good during the winter. So the question becomes, let's say that a person is wearing, right, he's already wearing the tzitzis on the lower level, and now he's putting on the second layer of tzitzis and the third layer of tzitzis. So should he make a bracha, right, on the second and the third pair of tzitzis that he's putting on if he's already wearing one pair of tzitzis? Right? Or should we say that no, that since he's already wearing that one pair of tzitzis, he is exempt, the extra pairs of tzitzis are just added on to the first one, and he does not need to make the bracha. Yes?
Didn't he ask that question?
Well, it's a very classical question, and it was around well before Rav Scheinberg had his practice. And in fact, it's a question which all of us who are married confront, right, every single morning. Presumably we put on, we're not like the Maram, who used to wait to put on his talis katan until after he took off his talis gadol. We put on usually our talis katan in the morning when we're getting dressed, and then we come to shul and we put on our talis gadol. So do we say a bracha on the talis katan and then another bracha on the talis gadol, or do we say that we're pater already, since we made a bracha on the talis katan, we're pater for making a bracha on the talis gadol? So by a show of hands, how many people make a bracha on the talis gadol?
Everybody.
Right, okay, so that's how we paskin. But it wasn't always so clear. There were very great Rishonim who were uncertain about whether or not to make the second bracha. That may be why the Maram preferred to put on his talis katan afterwards, in order to avoid any uncertainty that's involved over there. There are people nowadays, myself included, but for other reasons, who don't make a bracha on the talis katan when they put it on in the morning. Now that may be because they're uncertain about the size or about the material or something like that, but there are those who don't make a bracha on the talis katan in the morning because they're nervous that once they make that bracha, they will not be able to make a lehis atef batzitzis when they arrive in shul. And again, there's a number of different reasons why people might avoid making a al mitzvah tzitzis on their talis katan in the morning. But one of those reasons is to avoid any uncertainty when it comes to the lehis atif batzitzis that we make on the talis gadol in shul. And the origin for these uncertainties lies in the question that we left off with last Thursday. Let's just recall what we encountered on Thursday. Reb Yehuda used to hold that tzitzis was a mitzvah saseh, shelo azman grama, it was a timeless mitzvah. By day, we're obligated to wear tzitzis, and by night, we're obligated to wear tzitzis. And hence, presumably, just like we, who paskin that tzitzis is a daytime mitzvah, try to wear tzitzis as often as possible during the day, Reb Yehuda, who held that tzitzis was also a nighttime mitzvah, presumably would try to wear tzitzis during the night as well. And yet the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Yehuda would only make the bracha of our mitzvahs or lehis atif batzitzis, he only made that bracha in the morning. And the Gemara explained, because in the morning, that's when he would change his clothing. So he would change presumably from his pajamas into his daytime clothing, and that necessitated putting on his daytime tzitzis, and so he would make a lehis atif batzitzis, right, on the daytime tzitzis. The question we left off with was, so if he was changing from his pajamas to his daytime clothing and putting on his daytime talis and then necessitated a bracha of al mitzvahs or lehis atif batzitzis because it's a new pair of tzitzis, so therefore it needs a bracha, what about when he changed from his daytime clothing into his pajamas? Right? Why didn't he make a bracha of Lehis Atif Batzitzis when he changed into his nighttime tzitzis? After all, those nighttime tzitzis were different from his daytime tzitzis, just like going from pajama tzitzis to a regular tzitzis needs an Lehis Atif Batzitzis. Going from regular tzitzis to pajama tzitzis should require a Lehis Atif Batzitzis, and that was the quandary that we left off with at the end of Thursday. Yes, Reb Menachem. No? Okay, so the Rush relates this quandary directly to this question of what about if you're putting on Talis Gadol after you're already wearing a Talis Katan? What about if you're a medieval European and you're putting on your second and your third Talis after having worn your first Talis already for half the winter? So the Rush tells us that he believes that the reason that Rabbi Yehuda would not make a bracha of this atif batzitzis when he went to sleep in his pajamas is because he wore pajamas underneath his clothing the entire year long. Same pair of pajamas. The same pair of pajamas he would wear underneath his clothing the whole year long. And so his nighttime tzitzis he wasn't taking off by day and then putting on again when he was ready for bed. He was wearing his nighttime pajama tzitzis by day. He was wearing his nighttime pajama tzitzis by night. And since he never actually put it on anew, he never put it on afresh for the nighttime, therefore he would not make a new bracha. In contrast, his daytime clothing, he would change from day to day, and therefore the daytime tzitzis, he would indeed make a new bracha on every single morning. And I only did that once late, and I would be so exhausted when I woke up in the morning that it happened every so often that I would forget to take off my pajamas before I put on my daytime clothing. And so I would end up coming to Shacharis and discovering that my pajamas were underneath my regular clothing. But usually we don't do that at the same time. Right? We have to be aware that the different cultures are different. In Europe, right, as I said, they used to wear their winter clothing, their long johns, they would wear it the whole winter long. And so perhaps it's not that unreasonable, right, to say that the custom, right, this was probably even Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Yehuda was one of the Tanoim, right, the custom in Eretz Yisrael was perhaps to keep some sort of an undergarment on and never change out of it and only to change the overgarments.
Why couldn't you just say that Rabbi Yehuda had in mind when he made the bracha in the morning in the Satay that it should be till the next morning? He has in mind that even though he's going to change, it's still the mitzvah still continues, and there's no hesed hadas that he should have to make another bracha.
So Rabbi Yehuda, let's say, would have in mind to last us till the next morning, and so therefore he would never have to make another bracha, even when he changed into his pajamas, meaning that the bracha that he made in the morning would cover his pajamas in the afternoon. Right, so that may be halakhically impossible. I mean, that's the same question, basically. I make a bracha on my tzitzis, my talis katan in the morning. Can that bracha cover the talis gadol that I put on in shul? So the Rosh is claiming, right, that this Gemara subscribes to the position that it doesn't work. That your bracha on one pair of tzitzis that you're putting on, right, at one point in time and in one place will not cover another pair of tzitzis which you're putting on at a different point in time and a different place. And so perhaps for the same reason that we can't say that the bracha that he made years and years ago when he first put on his pajamas covers the tzitzis that he's putting on this morning, perhaps for that same reason we can't say that the tzitzis he's putting on this morning is going to cover his pajamas that he's putting on tonight. Yeah, so it's a good point that we do have the concept that sometimes two actions, right, can really be covered by the same bracha as long as a person continues to concentrate in between one action and the next. And we even have that when it comes to tzitzis as well. That's what I was talking about. That's what I was talking about on Thursday as well. Let's say that a person needs to use the restroom. So they take off the talis gadol in the middle of davening, and they go use the restroom, and then they come back. So the halacha is that they do not make a new bracha on the talis gadol when they come back, provided that they're wearing a talis katan. That partially has to do with our hesitancy, our uncertainty about whether the Rush is 100% correct, whether the Rush is only 80% correct. Right? And so since we're a little bit uncertain, we'll combine the fact that he's wearing his talis katan and say that the bathroom does not create a hesed hadas. Right? The same question comes when it comes to showering, when it comes to taking tzitzis off in order to take a nap, in all those questions. In those two instances, I believe the Mishnah Berurah is uncertain whether the interruption, the shower, or the nap constitutes a break in between the first action, the second action, and therefore each one needs its own bracha, or whether the two actions can combine and suffice with a single bracha, right? So you're definitely correct. As I said, the Maram and others were uncertain about this principle of the Rosh, but the Rosh's interpretation of this Gemara is very clear. The Rosh believes that this Gemara establishes a principle that once you are wearing a pair of tzitzis, if you're putting on a new pair of tzitzis, make a new bracha. It doesn't make a difference that you're already wearing a pair of tzitzis. That's why he says that Rav Yehuda would wear his pajama tzitzis 24/7, right, but he would still make a new bracha when he put on his daytime toga because it was a new pair of tzitzis. So that's the Rosh. Now there's another interesting opinion about Rabbi Yehuda's pajama practices, and that appears in Rabbeinu Gershom, and that would seem to go against the Rosh, more like along the lines that you were saying. Rabbi Gershom interprets the Gemara's question. The Gemara's question seemed to have been, it's about 10 lines, 9 lines from the bottom of the narrow lines on Mem Gimel, Amud Aleph, and let's just quickly read that one line of the Gemara's question again. 9 lines from the bottom of the narrow lines on Mem Gimel, Amud Aleph, and it's the words, Maishna. Maishna mitzafra. What's the difference from morning time? And that's the answer. Right? Why did he make the bracha specifically in the morning? If you're telling me that the bracha is connected with putting on a new pair of tzitzis, couldn't he have put on a new pair of tzitzis at any point in time during the day? When he came out of his shower, when he finished his nap, when he was changing from one suit of clothing to another? Why specifically in the morning? The Gemara says Rav Yehuda was an Inish Tzanua, an Adam Tzanua, and he would only change his clothing once per day, and that was in the morning time. So Rabbeinu Gershom interprets the question Maishna Mitzafra a little bit differently than the way that we just read it. We just asked, why is it particularly in the morning that he made this bracha of Lehis Atif Batzitzis? Why couldn't it have been at any other time in the day? But Rabbeinu Gershom understood the Rabbi Yehuda's practice was as follows. He would wake up well before dawn and he would learn Torah in his pajamas. And then, dawn arrived, he would change, right, from his pajamas into a regular daytime set of clothing, and he would make the bracha of Lehis Atif Batzitzis. So Rabbeinu Gershom wanted to know, he said, Maishna Mitzafra, why is the morning different? Why did Rabbi Yehuda wait, right, until morning? So, his first assumption was, Rabbi Yehuda wakes up, he gets dressed and he starts to learn, but he only makes the bracha when dawn arrives. That's a little bit strange for a Tana who says that tzitzis is a timeless mitzvah. If it's a timeless mitzvah, so then you can make the bracha even at night. Tzitzis is, for Rabbi Yehuda, is a nighttime mitzvah as well. So why did Rabbi Yehuda get dressed, right, when he woke up at midnight and then wait until dawn to make a bracha on his tzitzis? That's how Rabbi Gershon interprets this question. Maishna mitzafra, why is Rabbi Yehuda waiting till dawn to make a bracha on the tzitzis that he already put on? And to that the Gemara answers, Rabbi Yehuda was an Inish Tzanua, and he used to learn in his pajamas until dawn, and he would only change into his daytime clothing after dawn, and so therefore he wasn't delaying the bracha until well after he put on the tzitzis, but rather he would make the bracha as soon as he put on the tzitzis, just that he would wait to put on the tzitzis until morning time. Now that's an interesting question about why he would do that. Unless you could say that it's more comfortable to learn in pajamas, it's hard to understand exactly. That one it is a little bit harder to understand, that even culturally speaking, and why he would wait
maybe
to do that.
Go back to lie down
to take a
while.
Nap, exactly.
Take a nap. You got up very early.
Take a nap.
You
want
to go back to bed, so okay. You didn't want to go on
it's very passable, yeah. It's very passable. No, but he has to get dressed for the daytime anyhow at some point. Right? He's got to get dressed for the daytime at some point. Why is he going to do that at dawn? Meaning he's going to have to. Maybe it's easier to get dressed when it's light. It's easier to get dressed when it's light.
It was a lot that he said he got himself shoes without laces. said the time it takes to put on shoelaces, you waste so much time over a lifetime of putting
exactly.
on shoelaces, you could have, you know.
Maybe he didn't want to disturb his wife. Yeah. Okay, that's a good possibility. So, he wanted the clothing to be as fresh as possible for Shacharis. I hear that. Yeah, I hear that. Wait, so there's one other opinion. So you've encountered the Rosh. The Rosh says Rav Yehuda would wear his pajamas 24/7, then he would put on the daytime tzitzis anew every morning. That's the Rosh's opinion, and that's why he wouldn't make a bracha when he went to sleep on lisatif batzitzis on his pajamas, because he was already wearing those from the daytime, but he would make a lisatif batzitzis on his morning tzitzis. Rav Yehuda Gerim says that Rav Yehuda would wake up in the morning. We thought he would get dressed right away and delay the bracha, but then we realized, no, he would learn in his pajamas, and then he would make the bracha.
He believed he was learning at night and was sleeping at daytime.
Oh, he was sleeping.
He just got up for the make a bracha.
Just to learn a little bit at night.
Yeah.
Usually people who learn at night, they learn before they go to sleep.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Early in the morning.
Yeah, early in the morning, late at night, a veritable Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Yeah. Right, that was Reb Yehuda. Right, so we saw Rabbeinu Gershom, and finally we have what some people were sort of hesitantly suggesting last week, which is a suggestion of Rabbi Yaakov Emden, which is that even though Reb Yehuda believed that there was a mitzvah to wear tzitzis at night, but he still didn't do it. Now again, that has its own problems. If he felt that there was a mitzvah to wear tzitzis at night, why didn't he wear them? So Rabbi Yaakov Emden suggests maybe it was out of deference to the opinion of his fellow rabbis, that even though he believed that, but because the consensus, the majority, believed that tzitzis was not a nighttime mitzvah, so Rabbi Yehuda followed the consensus even against his own personal conviction. And we find that in many places in the Gemara, that for rabbis in the minority, then he, even though he believes that it's more likely that he's right than that the majority is right, sometimes he's supposed to be mevatel his das and follow the opinion of the majority. And so Rav Yaakov Emden suggests that maybe Rav Yehuda didn't wear tzitzis at night out of deference to the majority opinion.
Then how did he put it on his wife? Because then it could become an issue of clay gever.
Not just Klei Gever, it's if he was deferring to the majority opinion, so then he should defer across the board. Why is he splitting his deference? Yeah, that's actually a good question. I don't know.
Because nobody's going to see his wife, but everybody's going to see his best wife.
At night?
Anytime.
Hmm. Okay, it could be. So all of the pshatim, right, they have their own advantages, they have their own disadvantages, and that's, you know, one of the beauties, right, of the Gemara, as Ramban says, that Gemara is not like geometry. Right? You can't prove, right, that there's 188, right, geometry you can prove there's 180 degrees in a triangle, there's 360 degrees in a circle, and if two of the angles in a triangle together take up 90 degrees, then the third angle's got to take up 90 degrees, right? So geometry is very, very, you can prove things in geometry. Ramban says that Gemara is more like liberal arts. You can't prove anything with certitude, but rather we have a range of possibilities. Each one has its advantages, has its disadvantages, and the goal of an informed student of Gemara is to learn, right, by seeing many, many Gemaras and many, many Rishonim, and listening to many, many Shiurim, how to assign weight, right, to each of the advantages and to each of the disadvantages. That way, ultimately, a person can figure out which of the interpretations comes out ahead, right, in terms of, you know, having the weightiest advantages and the lightest disadvantages. Yes?
I don't understand how the second answers the question. Why didn't he make the, when he changed into his pajamas,
yes,
why didn't he make a bracha?
So the Rabbeinu Gershom reinterpreted the question. He said the question was not about nighttime. The question simply was, right, why did he wait until dawn in order to make the bracha? Right, meaning we could imagine that, let's say, that he would change his clothing once every 24 hours. And so there was no need, right, the same way that probably people don't, they don't change their undershirt before they go to sleep. I'm assuming that I'm on the same page as everybody else, that an undershirt is a type of clothing that you wear for 24 hours, and then you change. So Rabbi Yehuda presumably would wear his tzitzis for 24 hours before changing them, right? But the question is, for Rabbeinu Gershom, why did he change them when he woke up, but delay the bracha till dawn? And to that, the answer was no. He learned in his yesterday's clothing.
So that's what's confusing.
Yeah. Okay.
Every rabbi had his own shulchan aruch.
Ooh. I know you have your own.
That's a mouthful. That's a mouthful.
Well, I'll the tonight shulchan aruch.
Okay, I can talk about that for a long time. I don't want to get distracted. Rav Yaakov Weinberg has this beautiful thing about the compilation of the Mishnah, where he says that the Gadol Adar in each generation would compile basically the Mishnah for that generation. Rav Yudah Nasi, he says, was no different than the previous Gadol Adar. The only difference was that his was the last Mishnah, and so it lasted for all future generations also. But apparently, he would argue that all of the Chachamim in the generation were studying, right, if you will, the Shulchan Aruch of that generation's Gadol Adar. So that's Rav Yaakov Weinberg's pshat, a very beautiful pshat that I'm very fond of. So let's read inside now. We're 8 lines from the bottom of the narrow lines on Mem Gimel Amud Aleph.
How can this happen by Jews?
We would need its own 10-week series to answer
every
that.
Every Jew is smarter.
We would like to have a shield, okay, on the topic. Thank you.
So says the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan. We have a braisa. The rabbis taught, Hakol Chayavin B'Tzitzis. Everyone has to wear tzitzis. Or everyone who wants to wear a four-corner garment must put tzitzis on that garment. Makes no difference. Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, Gerim, Noshim, even women, according to Tanakama, right? That's the controversial. Even women have to wear tzitzis. Avadim, slaves must wear tzitzis. That's according to the Tanakama. All these categories: Kohen, Levi, Yisrael, Ger, Isha, Eved. All 6 categories must wear tzitzis. Rabbi Shimon Poter Benoshim. Rabbi Shimon says, like we paskin, that women are exempt from tzitzis. Mipneisha mitzvah sasesha as man gramahu, because tzitzis is a time bound mitzvah. In some sense, it could be that no clothing at night need tzitzis. It could be that nighttime clothing at any time don't need tzitzis, but tzitzis is a mitzvah where time plays a critical role. Time defines what or when one must wear tzitzis, and therefore women are exempt because it is a time-bound mitzvah. V'kol mitzvah sasesh as man grama nashim peturos. So before the Gemara can actually analyze the reason why we quoted this braisa, which is for women, the Gemara first needs to analyze why the first couple of lines or the first couple of words of the braisa are not redundant. Why do you need to tell me that a kohen needs to wear tzitzis, a levi needs to wear tzitzis? Would you think that because a kohen is a kohen, therefore he should be exempt from tzitzis? He's a kohen, so he doesn't have to eat kosher. He's a kohen, so he doesn't have to keep Shabbos. Like, what type of business is this? Is he's a kohen? He's just got more mitzvos. He can't go to graveyards. He's got to be careful about other things. He doesn't have fewer mitzvos because he's a kohen. So why does he need to tell me that that kohanim are just as obligated in tzitzis as Yisraelim are? So the Gemara quotes Amar Mar. The Braisa had said earlier, Master said, Hakol chayavim b'tzitzis kohanim levim b'Yisraelim. And the problem is pshita. This goes without saying. Right? There's nothing tangled about this that needs to be untangled. It goes without saying. It's so simple, so straight, that everyone can get it, right, from their own Shulchan Aruch. Everyone will be on the same page without the Gadol Adar writing it down in a Mishnah or a Braisa. If these people are exempt and don't have to wear tzitzis, man li chayev, who does have to wear tzitzis? So the Gemara explains, Kohanim etzrichale, I need it for the Kohanim, because Sakadai Techamina, I would have thought to say that indeed, because they're Kohanim, they should not be bound by wearing tzitzis. And the reason for that is, it's because it says in Apostle, Ksiv, Lo Sobashat Neis, Semru Fishtim Yachdav, and right after that, the next Apostle says, Gedilim Ta'aselach. And therefore, perhaps we would interpret that as a hekesh. We would interpret the juxtaposition as one of the methods which the Torah uses to convey halacha to us. And we would have said, man delo ishtari kilayim legabe, somebody for whom kilayim is not permissible, someone who has to observe under all circumstances, a person who has to observe the mitzvah of kilayim in all circumstances, that's the person... Who the Michayev betzitzis? That's the person who must wear tzitzis. But Hani Kohanim, these Kohanim, who sometimes have an exemption from Kilayim, who will the Ishtari Kilayim Legabayu, since Kilayim is Shari, Tari, Mutari, Mutari, since Kilayim is sometimes permissible for them, therefore Loli Chayvu, perhaps they should be exempt from tzitzis. Kamash Malon, that's not the purpose of that juxtaposition. We learn out other halachos from the smichut of Kilayim to tzitzis. However, this particular halacha, even people who are only sometimes obligated in Kilayim are still always obligated in tzitzis. So that's the beginning of the Braisa. The Gemara analyzed that. It said Kohanim are obligated. Now, I had a very quick thought about this. Remember, keeping back to the beginning of the Shir series, we said that one of the purposes of tzitzis is u'ri'isem u'so u'zchartem es kol mitzvos Hashem, that the purpose of tzitzis is to remind us to remember the mitzvos and to perform the mitzvos. And so I could have perhaps constructed a hava mina that those people who need the strongest reminder, perhaps they should be the most obligated in tzitzis. And those perhaps who don't need such a strong reminder, whose memories are good without the symbol right at their waist, perhaps those people should be less obligated in tzitzis. Now the Gemara doesn't say that. Right? The Gemara has a different reason why the Kohanim are exempt, but they didn't say, oh, maybe tzitzis is only for Gerim because they need more of a reminder. Now, that could be because the Gemara has a very high opinion of Gerim. Who needs more of a reminder, the Gerim or the regular Yisraelim? Maybe the regular Yisraelim need more of a reminder, right, than the Gerim. Right? But conversely, right, you could argue that no matter how high a person gets, right, they still need reminders about Hashem's mitzvos. That's like Rabbi Obam said over a couple of months ago about the internet. He said when the Jews they left Egypt and they worked for 49 days until they reached the 49th level of purity, and now they're coming and God is going to give them the Aseres Hadibros. And what do you expect God to tell the people who are on the 49th level of Tahara? You expect Him to tell them you should have the proper intentions when you're washing the Tilas Yadayim, and this is you should be medaktik, right, to do the mitzvah with this particular form and to fulfill. But what does God tell them instead? Lo tirtzach, don't murder. Right? Lo tinaf, don't commit adultery. This is what people need to hear when they're on the 49th level of holiness. So his answer was, yeah, even people who are on the 49th level of holiness, right, they still, the Yetzer Hara for Niuf, right, is still Yetzer Hara even for them. And so they need to hear lo tinaf. That's so fundamental. And he went on to say that a person might say, me, I'm a big tzaddik, internet's not going to harm me, but the Jews in the Midbar at Har Sinai were big tzaddikim too, and God felt that he still needed to say lo tinaf. So even the Kohanim, I think, right, the Gemara's silence indicates the Kohanim, right, just because they're Kohanim and they're doing whatever holy things that they're doing all day, doesn't exempt them from l'man tizkru, u'zchartem es kol mitzvos Hashem. Right, that the temptation, right, besets everybody. And everybody could use the reminder, right, by them constantly, of Uzchartem as Kol Mitzvos Hashem. So anyhow, the Gemara now turns to analyze the question of women. Right, and then we're going to be reading a little bit more swiftly today, so that we can make a siyum on the Tzitzis Gemaras by the end of the week. And so we're just going to be moving along a little bit more swiftly. I apologize, in general, I think that it's easier. It's a lot easier and more pleasant when we go slowly. But I think that there's also a toeles to completing the entirety of the sugya. And so that's what we're going to be aiming for. So the Gemara says, it's a good question. I suspect that they just sort of like were tagging along after the Kohanim. Wherever the Kohanim go, the Levim tag along after.
It's on a roll.
Yeah, that's what we call Agav Rihata. Right? That the Gemara has this thing that when you mention two of the groups, then you'll mention the third group as well. So we quote the Braisa again. Quote, Rabbi Shimon, Poter Benashim, end quote. So the Gemara wants to know, my time at Rabbi Shimon, what's the reason for Rabbi Shimon? Why does he say, what's the scriptural origin, what's the source in Chumash, that women are exempt from tzitzis, that women are exempt from tzitzis? And the Gemara explains the Sanya, the Braisa teaches us Rabbi Shimon's source. It says, u'ri'isem oso, that you should see the tzitzis. Prat liksus laila, this excludes nighttime, right, or pajamas, or blankets, right, which are usually worn, or at night, a person cannot see their tzitzis. Ata omer pravlexus laila, you really think that nighttime clothing or that nighttime is not the time for tzitzis because you can't see them. O ein ela pravlexus suma, perhaps nighttime tzitzis perhaps are obligatory by night, but blind people are exempt from tzitzis because they won't be able to see it, and therefore they won't be able to get the purpose of the tzitzis of ruisim also. Kishehu omer, when it says asher techaseba, that you're supposed to put tzitzis on every four-cornered garment that you cover yourself with, we, those three words are redundant. The Gemara interprets that redundancy as saying that someone who even otherwise you would have thought is exempt from tzitzis is nonetheless obligated. So arei ksusuma amur. So that is, the ksusuma is already covered. Asher t'chaseba includes, it says that a ksusuma, the clothing that even a blind person wears, is still obligated in tzitzis. Asher t'chaseba, that whatever you're covering with, whether a person is sighted, whether a person is blind, if he's covering himself with a four-cornered garment, he needs to put on tzitzis. So therefore, kishu ome, hamani mekayim urisemoso, so what does urisemoso teach me then? Prat lixus lila, that's coming to exclude nighttime clothing, that is exempt from tzitzis.
You got a blanket.
Blanket is exempt. Right.
You're not wearing the blanket.
It covers you.
If you're not wearing the blanket.
Yeah, it seems to be that it's exempt. It's a nighttime garment. Now what if a person wants to wear a blanket during the day? He forgot his talus right at work, and now he needs to come to shul right at home. Doesn't have a talus, but he wants to do something, so he says, you know what, I'll take my blanket, I'll punch four holes in it, I'll put the strings into it, so will he be yotzi the mitzvah? So the answer is maybe, according to one opinion, he would be yotzi the mitzvah, but in general we say that the person does not need to put, even if he's wearing the blanket as a Purim costume or as a replacement talus, in general we say that it does not require. Now there's other reasons for that as well, that the Gemara says, I have to remember, it's not in the Gemara, it's actually in the Medrash Halacha. There's a Medrash Halacha that says that there are certain types of clothing that never ever need tzitzis. Like if you have a four-cornered shoe, you don't have to put tzitzis on it. If you have a four-cornered hat, you don't need to put tzitzis on it. And so the Medrash Halacha says that for the same reason, a four-cornered blanket would not need tzitzis as well. It's only something which is meant to function as a certain type of clothing that needs tzitzis. So the Gemara tells us, we have a pasuk that is inclusive. It says asher techaseba, that something which you would have excluded really is included. Then we have a pasuk which is exclusive. Uritem oto, something that's visible, but not something that's invisible. So the Gemara is troubled. It's a little bit of a pun. Mara ita, what did you see to assign the inclusive pasuk to a blind person's clothing, the exclusive pasuk to the nighttime clothing, and say that a blind person has to wear tzitzis, but nighttime clothing are always exempt from tzitzis? Maybe we should do the opposite. Mara isa, what did you see? Lirabos ksosuma, to include, right? To be marbe, right? To add on, right? Ksosuma to the list of clothing which is obligated in tzitzis. Ulahotzi, and to exclude, to push out, to send out, yatsa tzei, the ksos laila. And what's the logic? What's the answer to that? Why is it that blind person's clothing is more likely to be included and nighttime clothing is more likely to be excluded? Okay, well, just let the Gemara tell us if you wish. Motz marbe ani ksusma, blind person's clothing, yeshna beriya itzal acherim. When we wear our tzitzis, we're not just reminding ourselves, we're reminding everyone who sees us. And so therefore, it's yeshna beriya itzal acherim. The blind person can fulfill that as well as anybody else. Again, it echoes back to what we saw, that there's more than a single purpose to the tzitzis. The tzitzis is a badge of honor. The tzitzis is our commitment to the service of Hashem. The tzitzis is our imitatio dei. So therefore, right, it's yeshna beriya itzal acherim. Other people can be inspired by our own proud wearing of tzitzis. Motzi anik sus laila, but I will exclude nighttime clothing. She'ina beriya itzal acherim. Those are clothing where it's dark. No one's going to see whether you're wearing tzitzis, right, or not. Or those are clothing which you usually only wear in the privacy of your home, and unless you're a public figure, like you said before, Rabbi Yehuda, so people are not going to see that whether or not you're wearing tzitzis, right, on your pajamas when you go to sleep, and therefore tzitzis are more important for a blind person to wear than they are for sighted people to wear at night. So we have here two psukim. One pasuk is urisem oso. The other pasuk is asher techaseba. And those psukim, we understand now how Rabbi Shimon interprets those psukim. He understands that Uri Serem Oso excludes nighttime clothing, and asher techaseba includes clothing for blind people. But the rabbi said that nighttime clothing is obligated in tzitzis. And so what are they going to do with the pasuk of Uri Yisam Oso? Right? This doesn't exclude nighttime clothing. Nighttime clothing are obligated in tzitzis. So the Gemara asks, V'rabbanon, Hayasher techaseba may avdilei. What do the rabbis do with this pasuk of Asher techaseba? And the answer is mibayi luhu lechidesanya. They need it for the halacha that's taught by the following brisa. It says al arba kanfos ksuscha, on the four corners of your clothing. That teaches me arba velo shalosh. A triangle shaped clothing is exempt from tzitzis. And now we finally have a line which we've been waiting for ages and ages. Ata omer arba velo shalosh. You think that it's four corners to the exclusion of three corners? O eino ela arba velo chamish. Perhaps it's four to the exclusion of five. Perhaps a five-cornered garment is exempt from tzitzis. And the pasuk says, kishehu omer asher techaseba. Clothing that you cover yourself with are obligated in tzitzis. That's an inclusion. It's coming to say even something that you would have thought doesn't need tzitzis, five-corner clothing in this case, I'm telling you it does. Harei ba'alat chamesh amur. So I've got the five-corner garment the same way that four-corner garments need tzitzis, five-corner garments need tzitzis. And of course, by the same token, six-corner garments and seven-corner garments and eight-corner garments and nine-corner garments ad infinitum, as long as they're not a circle. The mathematicians here can tell me whether circles don't do or don't have corners. That's always... And at what point do we say
it's asymptotic? Are you calling it in English? It's coming close.
Meaning, if you have 500 sides, you're close to a circle, but you're not an actual circle.
Exactly.
Right. So we talked a little bit earlier about what actually counts as a corner, because we saw that sometimes if the corner gets ripped, right, so then it might not count as a corner anymore, although there are many indications that even a 45 degree angle or a less than 45 degree angle still does, right, count as a corner. Right, however, that might only be when the tear extends more than halfway up the garment. Right, so if you just have a rip in the corner, that might not be enough. But if the rip goes halfway up the garment, so that might count. So that's why. No, I'm not ripping anything, right? But if you have tzitzis like mine, there's actually a discussion, right, about why is it, right, this type of garment over here, so it seems to have, in addition to the two corners here, it's also got corners over here. This is a corner, and this is a corner, and it is folded, but that doesn't make a difference. Even when this is scrunched up and folded, it still requires tzitzis. And the Mishnah Berurah generally discourages people from wearing five-cornered clothing or six-cornered clothing or seven-cornered clothing as their tzitzis, because there is one opinion that says, right, that such clothing are exempt, right, from tzitzis. And so the question is, why do you find in farm stores that they sell tzitzis that have six corners? Exactly. Well, not like a regular V-neck, because a regular V-neck would just be like a V, yeah, right? But this has actually two more corners,
right?
Right? And so the only passable heter for it, right, is the fact that the tear, right, that results in the corners, right, is less than 50% of the height of the baged, right? And therefore, those are not considered corners. The corner is only a corner if it's attached, right, to something that a rip, a tear, a seam, a separation that goes more than 50% up the garment. Yes?
They could round it also, like the kalpata. The rough kalpata is rounded, so there would be no problem with tzitzis.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about why jackets don't need. Right, this jacket, Baruch Hashem, this jacket has a genuine rounded corner. The mathematicians can confirm that for me. It looks pretty round, right, to me. But when I was giving the last time we talked about this sugya, I was wearing a square jacket, and I was actually puzzled. It looked like it had corners over here and corners over here and corners over here. And why should that jacket, right, be exempt from tzitzis? And we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. But this is really the main place for discussing it. Here the Gemara says, right, arba three-cornered triangle garments are exempt from tzitzis, five corners are obligated in tzitzis, six corners obligated in tzitzis, anything more than four corners is obligated in tzitzis, and we need some other explanation, which we discussed earlier, to explain why a jacket with square corners is exempt from tzitzis. Yes?
Four-cornered, all-around legging.
So, again, if you talk about a t-shirt which is sewn up along the side... Interesting. And there are slits in between the four pieces? So if there's no slits, then they don't count as corners. It's only a corner if it has a slit that goes more than 50% of the height of the baga. That's why we said, right, that the suits, that's why we said that a suit, even if it has, right, a slit over here, right, and a slit over here, right, which this one, I probably am supposed to cut these, right? So it's a good thing that, so if it has a slit exactly like these slits, except that that's sewn up, right? So, well, the sewing doesn't help because it's supposed to be cut, right? But because the slits don't go up 50%, they only go up about 20% of the height of the garment. So this is not a genuine corner. It's not a corner. We say that the slit is batel berov, that most of the garment is entirely closed. And therefore, the slit will be considered either non-existent, right, or to have the same characteristics as the rest of the garment. It is batel berov habeged, and therefore, this is not a corner, and this is not a corner. So if you have a t-shirt which is sewn up, it would seem to be that that because the sides are sewn up and they're meant, right, not to become unsewn, that that we would consider that it has no corners, not that it has eight corners. Yes.
But what I'm saying is, if you have a t-shirt that is square, instead of round,
we just discussed slits.
No slits.
No slits, forget about it. No slits,
but it's square.
Makes no difference.
Because the stitching eliminates the squareness. Right? Once you've stitched up the pieces, so it's no longer a square, just like in a Sefer Todah. Right, so you have, right, you have, you know, square pieces of parchment sometimes, but you stitch them to one another, and so it becomes a big rectangle. We don't view it as multiple squares, we view it as a big rectangle. So the same thing when you've got a t-shirt, even if it's initially made out of four square pieces of fabric, but because you've stitched them into a circle, it's considered to be a beged atum, a closed garment without any corners whatsoever. So that may be, right, the solution for why we don't put tzitzis on our clothing, although we did point out that this does have four corners, one corner, two corners, three corners, and four corners on the collar, and so the question still remains, why don't I need to put tzitzis on the collar of the jacket? And to that, the Magen Avraham and others said that you only have to put tzitzis when you're going to be surrounded on all four sides. You should be surrounded, kima lachav yitzavelach, or something along those lines, that the tzitzis are supposed to surround the person according to the Medrash. And if it's impossible, right, because of the style of the clothing, for the tzitzis to be surround, you know, surround sound, so then it is exempt from tzitzis according to this suggestion of the Magen Avraham, and that will be the source for why this jacket is not obligated in tzitzis, even though it's got the four corners. So, one second. So what do we have now? We have here three or four halachot. We have number one, nighttime clothing. Number two, clothing worn by a blind person. Number three, clothing that has more than four sides. And we have how many psukim? We have two psukim. Right? Number one is the pasuk of Asher Tichaseba, which is either including blind people's clothing or including five-cornered garments. And then we have the pasuk of Uritemoto, which is either excluding nighttime clothing, or we don't know what the other possibility of what that pasuk is going to do. So let's read on, and we'll have to figure out exactly how each of the Tanayim find the basis for these three halachos in Psukim, and how each of the Tanayim find some interpretation of the pasuk, that the pasuk should not be redundant. So again, let's just take a look. We said three-corner triangle garment is exempt from tzitzis. Five-corner pentagon garment is abrogated in tzitzis. Kishu omer shetchaseba ribalat chamish amur. Mani mekayim al arba. So why does the Torah say specify four-cornered garment? Arba velo shalosh. On a four-cornered garment, but not on a triangle garment. So the question is, Mara ita l'rabot ba'alat chamesh u'lotzi ba'alat shalosh. Why is it that I am including a five-cornered garment and excluding the triangle? Why not include the triangle and exclude the pentagon? What's the difference? Why is it that it's more logical, right, to assign the inclusive pasuk to a pentagon than it is to assign it to a triangle? What's the difference? And the Gemara explains, Mar be'ani ba'alat chamesh, I'll include the pentagon, sheyesh bichlal chamesh arba. Because a pentagon has 4 plus 1 corners. A hexagon has 4 plus 2 corners. Right? A
heptagon,
thank you, has 4 plus 3 corners. An octagon has 4 plus 4 corners. So therefore, all of those, you can, right, they're part of what the pasuk means when it says, al arba kanfos ksuscha, on the 4 main corners, right, of the garment. Which are the main corners of the garment? It's the ones that are the furthest away from one another. I'm sure that it will be a very fun type of project to try to design a computer program, right, to figure out any irregularly shaped garment, which of the corners are the furthest away from one another, and therefore should get tzitzis, right? But it's the corners that are furthest away from each other, those are the ones that get tzitzis. I imagine that what that means is that you have to draw. Yeah, I'll leave it for the programmers to.
They still will need a slit anyway, regardless.
The second one?
The CAD software draws a straight line from every corner to every other corner and measure the line.
Ooh, so you're doing straight lines, and you wouldn't measure, let's say, the perimeter between the two corners?
Wouldn't it be the same?
No, I'm not sure whether we're going to measure it directly or whether we'll measure it around the perimeter. Like, what would happen if the garment has like some sort of a hood or something which elongates the perimeter in between two, so that if you go directly they're closer, right, but if you measure along the perimeter they'll be further. Right, that's one of the reasons why the Mishnah Berurah recommends that we shouldn't wear, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 cornered garments for our tzitzis. We don't have hexagon talitot because the Mishnah Berurah says there's all sorts of difficulties in terms of knowing where to put the tzitzis properly. That's in addition to the fact that there is one opinion in the Tanaim who says that it's exempt from tzitzis entirely. It's not on our page, but it's someplace else in Shas. There is such an opinion, but aside from that, it's very, very difficult to know how to measure properly which corners are the ones that need tzitzis. So again, the Gemara says a pentagon, a hexagon, a septagon, an octagon, nanagon, all these things, they need tzitzis because within the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 corners, you've got 4. A triangle does not need tzitzis because it doesn't have within the 3. 4 is not within the 3. So again, Mar be'ani ba'alat chamesh yish bichlal chamesh arba. I'll include the pentagon because 5 includes 4. Umotzi ani ba'alat shalosh she'in bichlal shalosh arba, because there is no 4 that's included in 3. So now we understand again. Asher t'chaseba for Rabbi Shimon includes a blind person's clothing. For the rabbis, it includes a pentagon. What about Uritemoto? So first of all, where does Rabbi Shimon get the pentagon from? Rabbi Shimon me asher nafka. He gets it from, there's 3 extra words there. Asher, t'chaseh, ba. So the asher will teach me that a pentagon needs tzitzis, and the t'chaseh will teach me that a blind person's clothing needs tzitzis, and the rabbis, asher lo mashmaluhu. They don't consider that to be redundant, because once you're writing t'chaseh, you need to write the asher as well. And therefore, it's a single redundant phrase rather than three discrete redundant words. And so we understand, Rabbi Shimon says that there's more redundancies available, so therefore he will learn out more halachot from this pasuk. And the rabbis say there are fewer redundancies available, so therefore all that they will learn out from this pasuk is the pentagon. What about the other pasuk though? What about the pasuk of Ulitem Oto? So says the Gemara, V'rabbanan hay Ulitem Oto Mayavile. The rabbis, what do they do with Ulitem Oto? Rabbi Shimon says that Ulitem Oto comes to teach me what? Ulitem Oto. It's exclusive. What does it exclude for Rabbi Shimon? Nighttime clothing. Excellent. So Rabbi Shimon does that with it, but what do the rabbis do with Ulitem Oto? They're not going to interpret it as an exclusion, says the Gemara, but rather Mibayiluhu L'chidesanya. They need it for the following series of brightot, which are more agadic in nature than halachic. They're going to tell us that we need that pasuk for its simple message. The message is, look at the tzitzis and remember something. That's the simple meaning of the pasuk. They say the pasuk is not redundant to include or exclude any unusual situation. The pasuk is very, very necessary for its plain and simple message. Look at the tzitzis. See the tzitzis, and when you see the tzitzis, you should be reminded of something. Says the Braisa that the rabbis are quoting now, Uritoto uzichartem. See it and remember. Re'ei mitzvah zo, look at this mitzvah, uzichor mitzvah acheret tatluya bo, and remember a different mitzvah, right, which depends on this mitzvah. Ve'ezo zo, which other mitzvah, right, is closely connected to tzitzis. If I woke you up in the middle of the night and said, Tzitzis, what are you free associating it with? Shema. Right? Ezo zo, zo kriyat shema. It's talking about kriyat shema, and the association between Tzitzis and kriyat shema goes very, very deep, as the following Mishnah proves. Itnan me'emasai koven es shema b'shachlis. When is the earliest time for reading shema? In the morning, mishayakir bein tchilat lavo. When you can tell the difference between the blue strings on your Tzitzis and the white strings on your Tzitzis. When we say tell the difference, we mean without all of that light pollution that you find in the city, but simply by the light of the rising sun alone. Once the rising sun provides sufficient light to tell the difference between the blue strings on your tzitzis and the white strings on your tzitzis, that is mishayakir, that is the earliest time of morning to say kriyat shema. So we see that there's this close link between kriyat shema and tzitzis. But it goes even further than that. Ulitem oto, look at the tzitzis. Or when you look at the tzitzis, remember something. Tanya Idoch, another braisa tells us. Ulitem oto, uzichartem, look at them and remember. Re'ei mitzvah zo, look at this mitzvah, uzichor v'acheret hasmuchala. Remember a different mitzvah, this one, not which is conceptually connected to it, but rather which is juxtaposed to it in the text of Torah Shebichsav. Ve'ei zo, which mitzvah is juxtaposed next to tzitzis in Torah Shebichsav? Zo mitzvat kelayim, that the tzitzis is supposed to remind us perhaps more of the necessity to get our clothing shatnez tested, right, than perhaps of the other 610 mitzvos. Dichsiv los lebashat nez semer ufishtim yachdav, followed by gedilim ta'aselach. A third braisa, what else is tzitzis connected with? What else is tzitzis supposed to remind us of when we see it? Tanya idach uritem oto uzchartem es kol mitzvot Hashem. That teaches me that kevan shenitchayev adam b'mitzvah zo, once a person is obligated in tzitzis, when he becomes bar mitzvah maybe, so then nitchayev b'chol mitzvot kulon, he's obligated in all of the other mitzvos. Or perhaps it means to say that a person who's obligated in tzitzis is obligated in the other 612 mitzvos. We're not going to say that a person can be obligated in tzitzis, but then only be obligated in 400 of the other 612 mitzvos. Who is only obligated in 400 of the 600 mitzvos? There is somebody. Women, right? Women are exempt from mitzvos asei. I'm making up the number, but basically it's less than 613. Right? Because only 14? Okay, so 599, right? So when a person...
They have all the lotas and couple of ases, very few. So
it's impossible. You're saying it's impossible for a person to be obligated in kol hamitzvot kulan. Right? So why are we picking here on the women? Right? I'm not obligated, you're not obligated, it makes a difference. There's mitzvahs that only Yisraelim can fulfill, there's mitzvahs that only Kohanim can fulfill, there's mitzvahs that only Leviim can fulfill, and so the concept of being obligated b'chol mitzvot kulan is a misnomer. So let it include women then also. Right? Look at the Gemara's interpretation of this brayso. So the Gemara says it's Rabbi Shimon he, the Amar mitzvah taseh as man grama he, that it's a time-bound mitzvah, and therefore, if a person is obligated in tzitzis, he's obligated in the 613. And if he's not obligated, right, in the 613, then she's not obligated in tzitzis. The Gemara seems to understand that this brayso reflects the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Stephen's question is a very good question. Nobody's obligated in all the 613, and so what do you mean you're obligated in all the other mitzvos?
99% of the population doesn't do Yibum or Chalitza. Maybe 1% is a high number.
Yeah, but the person, we're still obligated in the eventuality that it should happen.
You can't do some of them because you're not in Israel.
Right.
Right, but again, that we could talk about being obligated, but when we talk, let's say, about the mitzvah of Birkat Kohanim, right, so Yisrael cannot fulfill that mitzvah, he's not obligated to fulfill that mitzvah, that's uniquely a mitzvah for Kohanim, or the mitzvah of Hafrashat Truma. Also, you could argue Kohanim maybe in some circumstances are obligated in Hafrashat Truma, but what about, what's another mitzvah that's unique for you? There are mitzvahs, right, which are unique for Yisraelim and not for Kohanim, so we'll have to figure that out. So again, Rabbi Shimon he the Amar mitzvah asay she'az man grama he. Let's quickly read a couple more lines because we'll get to the end of this sequence of braisos, and then we'll pick up with something new tomorrow. So the Gemara says another braisa Tanya idach u'itemoto u'zchartem es kol mitzvot Hashem. See the tzitzis, remember all of God's mitzvos. Shkula mitzvah zo, this mitzvah is shakul, its weight is equal, right, to kol mitzvot kulam. It's equal to all the other 612 mitzvos. That's how important.
It doesn't necessarily say you should do it, it's just remember it.
Yes.
We say it means you should.
It's a juxtaposition, I think. I think the Bryce is interpreting oto, kol mitzvot Hashem. Oto, kol mitzvot Hashem, they're next to one another, so that tells you that there's sort of an equivalence there. On the one side of the uzichartem is the tzitzis, on the other side it's the kol mitzvot Hashem, makes it sound as if they're evenly weighted on the scale. Shkula, keneged kol mitzvos kulam. V'tanya idach, and another braisa says, uritem oto uzichartem v'asitem re'ia. When you see it, mevi'a lidei zechira, that brings you to remember, and the zechira mevi'al idei asiya, when you remember the mitzvos, that'll bring you to do the mitzvos. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says, kol hazarez b'mitzvah zo, whoever is swift and careful about the tzitzis, zoche u'mekabel p'nei shechina, he will be zoche to see the face of the shechina, shtikziv hacha uritem oto. And here we saw somebody said something very radical about this, uritem oto kavayachol, right, that the tzitzis are meant to remind us of the experience that the Nevi'im had, the Maaseh Merkava, right? Almost to see some sort of a something which symbolizes, whatever it is, Ksiv Hasam, Es Hashem Elokecha Tirah, the Oto, Ta'avod, that same Oto, there's a Gzeira Shava there, to say that Uitem Oto, when a person sees a tzitzis there, he's reminding himself very, very directly, right, about the presence of Hashem that rests upon him, that hovers over him, that accompanies him everywhere that he goes, and that gives him success in everything he does.
Yeah, I would like to. So if you don't have a towel, you can put a blanket without.